I did. Hey, welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show that champions the local comic book shop. We're broadcasting, as always, on 93.3 CFMU McMaster's award-winning radio station, thanks to Chris and myself.
That's right. Thanks to Walter and myself.
And we're podcasting at comicbookdaily.com. I am Walter DeRaglia, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I'm Chris Owen, professor at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
And Chris and I, every week we gather here, we talk about comic book stuff, and this week's not going to be any different.
No different at all.
Chris, we got a lot to go through today. I don't even know what we're going to talk about, to tell you the truth.
We have lots to talk about, you know. It's, we do. Oh, yeah, we got lots. Hey, by the way, did you like that song I played there?
It was fantastic. I was going to ask you, what's that from?
So that's called Saturday Night on Saturn. Saturday Night on Saturn by Les Baxter. There you go.
Oh, that's, yeah, that's an old jazz guy.
Old jazz guy. Old guy.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. So
all right.
There you go.
So, Chris, we're going to start the show like we do every week with you taking over and talking about new comics.
New this week.
Right. New comics that hit the stands at your local comic book shop.
Now, do we have a sponsor?
Yeah, we do, of course. Nice. We have our regular new this week sponsor. I think they bought a whole block.
They bought a whole month, week. Yeah.
And that's, of course, Bushmills Club Soda, the 10-year-old club soda.
The 10-year-old club soda. Yes. I like that. You know what?
You know what? Believe it or not, Chris, they're really touting the fact that it is single malt club soda.
Single malt club soda. I didn't know that existed, but it's good to know.
It does. And it means high quality.
High quality. None of that blended stuff.
No. So, Chris, tell me, all right. What have you picked this
first
week?
Off on the roster here, we've got, I'm really digging this new Justice League No Justice. And this is, of course, by DC and... by Scott Snyder, James Tynion IV, and Joshua Williamson are the writers, and Francis Manapul and Marcus Toe are there. Good Toronto boys.
Good
there.
Toronto kids. I think they're both Raid boys, aren't they?
I believe they are, yeah. And you know what? I love this book. I love the fact that it's got pretty much all your favorite heroes in it. You know what? Even the ones that are not your favorite heroes. Hold on. First five pages. I'm just going to list a few characters here. We've got Green Arrow. We've got Beast Boy. We've got the Legion. Flash, Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, Cyborg, Lobo, Harley Quinn, Starfire, Lex Luthor, Martian Manhunter. The list goes on and on and on.
And on and on.
It's just a huge smattering. Do you like that word, smattering?
I like it. Smattering.
Of all your favorite characters. And
Chris,
as
you rhymed off those characters,
yeah.
I know it never worked.
Yeah.
Okay. But wouldn't it be cool? Remember when we were kids? I used to trade hockey cards all the time.
Yeah,
and you just rhyme off players. You know how you rhymed off all those things?
Need them, got them, need them.
And then you'd rhyme off like, oh, I got a LaFleur, I got a Bossy, I got a Trottier, I got a, you know. They tried comic book cards, but they never worked out.
You know what? They do, but they don't.
But as a collecting thing, they tried it as a game.
They tried the game, but they also did have collectible cards where you'd buy packs.
They had
Marvel.
Just the characters on them?
They just have the characters on them. But the problem is there's not... this is gonna sound stupid, but there's no longevity to it.
How?
Because there's no rookie cards.
Sure there is. No, listen. If Opeachy, let's say, yeah. or Tops,
yeah.
let's say, had a yearly supply of cards, yeah. and they treated it like sports. Right. So if that year Deadpool was introduced in comics, he'd have a rookie card, a Deadpool rookie card, and then like Batman would have his career stats. And he'd go way back to 1939.
And then you know, comic book character trivia on the back.
Did you know? And they got the dumb little drawings and stuff.
Yeah.
Like if they treated it like sports cards.
I would like that, but I think they've tried it and it's never got a dinner.
Okay, hold on. Let me tell the listeners that is No Justice from DC 204. At your local comic book shop today.
All right. Next up, we've got The Claws of a Killer by Marvel. Do you remember SCTV and Joe Flaherty's when he was Count Floyd?
Of course I do.
Scary stuff, folks.
I also remember Billy Van as the librarian.
Oh, that was from
the Hilarious House of Frankenstein.
Yeah, that was when Vincent Price actually lived in Dundas.
Yeah,
can you believe that?
That's awesome.
Crazy.
One of the best shows ever. And he would read something lame,
but it would sound amazing.
And then he would turn to the camera and go, "Did I scare you?"
Billy Van, where are you now? So look, we've got Hunt for Wolverine. Basically, this is a book all about Wolverine coming back. It's got Sabretooth in it. If you're a fan of Wolverine and Sabretooth, this is the book to get for sure. This is number one the cover's got an awesome cover by Greg Land. It's got great art by Butch Geiss. I don't know how you ever...
Butch Goring.
Whatever his name is.
Played for the Islanders in 82.
Geiss, maybe? I don't know. Written by Mariko Tamaki. But anyways, good looking book.
He played for the Yankees in 97.
I think so. Traded.
Hey, The Claws of a Killer, A Hunt for Wolverine number one, is at your local comic book shop. Check that out.
All right. Next up, we've got The Archies.
Hey, we're The Archies. Archies.
Yep. Hey, we're The Archies. That's not how the song goes. That's the Monkees.
Oh. The Monkees sung that?
Hey, with the Archies.
Oh, I get it. Never mind. Keep doing
fine,
what you're doing.
It's fine. Anyways, Archies. This is the Archies versus Josie and the Pussycats.
Uh-huh.
Basically, they have a band off. Like they have a rock and roll music band off thing. Mm-hmm. So it's got all your favorite Archie characters as well as all your favorite Josie and the Pussycats characters. So we've got the story by Alex Segura and Matthew Rosenberg with art by Joe Eisma. It's your typical fun Archie book that's got lots of Josie and the Pussycats.
What would that cover style be, Chris? Would that be 70s or would that be pastel-y 80s or kind of 70s pop art or what the heck would that be?
It's a great 60s question. Psychedelia? I'm going to say 80s.
80s?
I'm going to say 80s pastel, neons, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's
right?
Kind of a little mix of everything.
Yeah.
The Archies, number 7. At your local comic book shop today. Check that out.
All right. Next up, we've got from the Cartoon Network, we have Steven Universe number 16.
Now, I'm sorry? What's it called?
Steven Universe number 16. Now, you may not be familiar with what Steven Universe is.
I'm not familiar.
It's a obviously a cartoon that's been developed into a comic. It has a huge following, in the animated circles.
Wow.
It's a neat-looking book. I'll be honest, I really don't quite get it myself, but it does.
Too old, Chris.
I think
that's
so.
That's what it is.
I think so. I think so.
All right, so that's Steven Universe.
Steven Universe.
Number 16 from Kaboom at your local comic book shop today.
And finally, I've got American Gods here by Neil Gaiman with scripts.
That's still going on, or is that being revisited?
Well, it's different. It's called American Gods, My Ainsel.
Wow.
So it's like another offshoot. With the story and words by Neil Gaiman, script and layout by P. Craig Russell, and art by Scott Hampton. So you know what, some amazing artists there, and of course Neil Gaiman's an amazing writer. Did you know Neil Gaiman was on Big Bang Theory the other day?
He was he?
Yeah, he was. So anyways,
is Big Bang Theory still like new?
Or
are they all reprints? Reruns?
No, it's still going new. Yeah,
still new.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, Neil Gaiman, American Gods. Number what? Number three.
American Gods, Ainsel.
My Ainsel.
Sorry, yes.
At your local comic book shop today.
All right. So that's all.
Oh, that's all. Okay, Chris. Yeah. You know, you just picked a few of them, but man, I don't know how to tell you. There are just tons at your local comic book shop. So we encourage you to head down and check things out.
All right, listen. Let's have a quick musical interlude here. We're going to come back after a little bit of Stevie Wonder.
I love that song.
I don't think I've ever played Stevie Wonder on the show.
Ah, Stevie's the best. Musical genius.
Really is.
Musical prodigy.
Yeah.
And one of the probably...
Do you have a favorite Stevie Wonder song?
My goodness. It changes from time to time. I've liked... I think my favorite album is Inner Visions.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Me too.
Songs in the Key of Life is great. Yeah. Fulfilling the First Finale is great. Talking Book's good. But definitely that time... Up to Songs in the Key of Life.
Yeah.
Like 76 and below.
Yeah, I agree.
Right?
Yeah.
And he just, whatever he did, just was magic.
Yeah, no,
right?
I agree.
Fantastic. Great. One of my favorite of all time.
Oh, me too. Great. Me too.
Thanks for playing that, Chris.
Hey, no problem. Anything for you.
And it's a great segue.
Oh, yeah?
Into industry news brought to us by Stella Artois.
Stella Artois.
The Belgian club soda.
I thought Bushmills Club Soda had the whole license.
They bought a month's worth of
intro?
New this week.
Oh, I have this week. God. Okay.
But you just threw them an extra plug. We're going to have to charge them extra for that. Yeah, so it takes us into industry news. And Chris, I don't know, where do you want to start?
All right, let's start with... Okay, you know what? I really want to talk about this original art records being set.
Oh, yeah. Now, Chris, you're a big original art fan.
Well, and this is what I want to talk about. It's very near and dear to my heart.
Uh-huh.
So I do collect original art, what I can afford.
Original comic book art.
So what
you
we're
focus on comic book art.
So what we're talking about here is comic book art, whether they be sketches by an artist or the actual original pages by the artist or the cover or paintings, things like that, but of comic book art. I'm not talking about fine art. I'm not talking about mosaics. Or talking about comic book art.
Comic book art.
Not even really. I mean, I guess you can delve into some illustration there.
Right.
But really,
yeah.
We're talking about comic book style illustration.
Comic book style art.
Not like
published would be the key.
Published would be the key.
Now, before we get into this, Chris, you're a learned man in art. You have a couple of absolutely incredible, amazing portfolios, like little binders.
Yeah.
In the early days, you would go around to cons and have people draw characters for you.
Yeah.
And some of these artists are really big-time artists now.
So,
But none of that art, my point is, none of that art is published art.
Right.
Now, where does that kind of art from these characters drawing from these artists drawing these characters, how does that compare in terms of desirability to, let's say, published art?
You know what? It comes down to the buyer, because some people like to have unpublished. So to have like, oh, it's unpublished, meaning...
So here's a Darwin Cook doing Batman, but in a sketchbook for a fan.
That no one's ever seen before.
No one's ever seen before.
Right. Which is good and bad, because sometimes people like the fact that no one's seen before. But then... It's bad until it goes to be seen, until you want to sell it, because then it's like, oh, hey, we've never seen this. Could you imagine? Never seen that. Oh, this is awesome.
Well, yeah, it's the first time ever.
First time ever seen this.
Because you're right, because sometimes you get pages that are for sale, and you've seen that page for sale
over and over.
Over and over.
And
it just gets flipped.
And no offense to say, okay, and no offense, because they're still worth lots of money, mm-hmm. but let's say you go to get a page by George Perez from when he did Teen Titans. Well, there's lots of those around, right? And I'm not saying they're not all great. They're all fantastic, uh-huh. but it's sort of similar, right?
I understand. So,
but if you get a guy like Darwin Cook, and let's say all of a sudden, you know, he wants to, you know, hey, can you draw me Ghost Rider? Well, that may be the only Ghost Rider picture he's ever done.
Right. Right? I get it.
It's not a published piece, but that might be the only one.
Right.
Right? So it depends on the character. It depends on the who's drawing it and when and where. And, I mean, certainly you get a guy like Adam Hughes who does sketches for people all the time.
Yeah.
Not nearly as much as he used to do. But, I mean, the stuff that's selling for big money on eBay are the ones that he's getting that were originally done at conventions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're talking about thousands of dollars for these sketches that they've never been published.
Right.
Because they were commissions.
Right.
Right. But now those guys have gone off and sold them because they realize they can make lots of money on them.
Do you have any idea of how many unique pieces you have over those years, those early years? Because you were very active. You were so active that all the artists knew you.
Yeah, yeah, for a long time, yeah.
You're like, you know, hey, here comes Chris. What do you want this time, Chris?
And I was doing that thing where, you know, I would pick a character and I would fill up an entire sketchbook or two.
Right,
or based on that character. Based on that character. So, you know, it was one of those things where nobody was doing that kind of stuff at the time.
It got so bad with Mr. Owen here that they were inviting Chris to parties. The artists at a con, like in Chicago, they would have like a penthouse or something like that, rent for a party. Hey, Chris, why don't you come on up? Right?
It's true.
I remember the best story you ever told me, Chris. Was the artist, an American artist, Sayer?
Oh, Stuart Sager?
Stuart Sager.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you were telling me you went up and they invited you and they had foods and drinks you were chit-chatting and stuff like that. And they were dry. They were so innovative that Stuart Sager there, he drew you something.
Oh, no, I know what you're talking about. That was by Tommy Castillo.
Oh, Castillo.
Yeah.
He drew stuff with just like chicken wings.
Yes.
Like he didn't use a pen.
Yeah.
He didn't use a pen. You can tell the story.
Oh, it was up at the bar in a penthouse somewhere and nobody had any pens or markers or anything.
Uh-huh.
So this awesome artist, Tommy Castillo, started doing drawings of Batman and whoever with whatever he could get his hands on. So there would be like mascara and chicken wing grease and ashes from the cigarettes and hot sauce. And all that kind of stuff.
Isn't that the most beautiful thing ever?
It was awesome.
Spontaneous art like that.
Totally wrecked, I'm sure. You know, the grease would just seep through it.
Yeah,
seep
through it. But it was of the moment, right?
That's right. Yeah, it was awesome.
Oh, that's fantastic. All right, so I mean, obviously, we went on a tangent there a little bit with art, but so I mean, you're a fan of art.
I love original artwork. I think it's getting.
It's growing.
So let me tell you something. So when I first started buying original artwork, it was relatively affordable. But I'm going to tell you, I started buying it. I think my first piece ever was probably from about 1985. So I was pretty young at the time, relatively speaking.
That's pretty early to get your first piece, Chris.
First piece of art.
12? My goodness.
And I loved the idea of having an original piece of artwork. And then, you know, as I got older, you know, I was going to more conventions and buying more artwork. And but nowadays, there was a time where I could go to a convention and come home with 10 pieces of artwork.
Right.
Right. Nowadays, I think I would go to conventions and I'd be lucky to get one.
One, right.
Because not only is it's more popular to buy artwork now, mm-hmm. but it's because it's more popular.
It's more expensive.
It's more expensive.
Right.
Right. So, you could, back in the day, you could buy a piece of artwork for $50 or something like that. Heck, even, you know, when I first started, it was like 20.
Right.
But now it's like, you know, $400, $500, $1,000.
Part of the reason, and it's not. Let's paint the artists in a better light here.
Oh yeah,
it's not because this isn't because the artists got greedy per se.
No, no.
It's because the artists were actually seeing that their work. You know, here they are thinking they're doing something for a fan.
Yeah,
And then they charge the guy $20. And then they see that piece up next week on eBay selling for $200.
That's right.
Right? And okay, he may have let that one go, or she may have let that one go. But then it happens again, and then it happens again. And I think over about a 1-2 year period, there was that transition where all the artists, they almost kind of, I could see them talking about it together at one of these little impromptu little parties that they have something. Yeah. That's, you know, I don't know, I'm going to raise my, don't raise your price. You know, and then like they have all this argument about, but what are we going to do? Yeah. And then they did the only thing that was right for them.
Is they raised their prices.
They raised their
prices.
Or they
stopped doing them.
Or they stopped
doing them. You look at a guy like Stuart Immonen, who used to not charge at all for sketches.
Right.
And now he doesn't even go to conventions because he got so tired
of that happening.
Right. And maybe I'm speaking out of turn. Maybe it could have been other reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's other artists out there that, you know, they would see their artwork being sold for, you know, 10 times, if not more than that, up on eBay.
Right. Well, why did I spend the whole weekend at a con working hard to get this guy this commission so he can make $200?
Yeah, I totally get it. And I don't blame him whatsoever. And the other thing is, I remember talking to one artist about it, and he almost felt guilty, but not quite. Like, I remember I was asking him, I was talking to him, I said, you know, I got to ask you, like, how come you're charging $500 for a sketch, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, because I can do 10 sketches and make $500, or there'll be one guy that is willing to give me $500 for one sketch. So why wouldn't I just want to do one sketch for $500?
Yeah.
And I was I totally get it.
Yeah, I
right?
agree.
Yeah,
yeah,
I totally get it.
Yeah.
So not every, you know, and all the power to them.
All the power to them.
And they deserve it.
Yep.
Deserve it. Anyways.
That's fantastic. So, hey, let's get to the piece we're talking about is that you know, the stature and the desirability of this comic book related art is growing so much that record prices have been set.
Totally, yeah. So record prices. So you know what? So now I want to go straight to the Osamu Tezuka page.
Uh-huh.
Because, so in case you don't know who this guy is, so Osamu Tezuka is kind of known as the grandfather of manga. And so he had a page of Astro Boy, and so he's he's like the, I don't know what you want to call it, the granddaddy of of manga, which is sort of the comics in Japan. So anyways, it sold, so an original page of his artwork sold for 269,000 euros.
That's like 320,000 US dollars, roughly 400,000 Canadian dollars.
Yeah, it's crazy. Now, I wanted to start with that because that's an actual page of artwork.
Right,
now,
from a published
book. Came out in Japan Times.
Right.
Sorry, no, it came out in Astro Boy.
Right.
This was according to Japan Times. Now, Frank Frazetta.
Oh, the god.
God of
20th century
pulp illustration.
Fantasy illustration.
Yeah, perfect.
That would be the best way to describe it.
So here's a guy that worked in comics because he did a lot of EC stuff.
He did a lot of EC. He did a lot of ME. He did like Ghost Rider.
He even did like, what do you call it? Funny Animal stuff.
Yeah, he did Funny Animal. He was, you know, just a pencil for hire in the early 50s, mid 50s, drawing comics. Probably, you know, stuff like B Barbie Riders and you know, stuff like, what's he doing on that?
Right.
That kind of stuff.
But then he started doing a lot of
paintings
for novel covers.
Right.
And all of a sudden he started doing Conan. They were started reprinting Conan.
I think
novels.
What was the book publisher? I seem to remember Ace. Ace was the early 60s book company that started reprinting the Conan stories from Robert E. Howard.
And
they used Frank Frazetta painted covers.
Right.
But
that look really helped define the look of Conan.
It did define the look of Conan. So you had those iconic Frost Giant's daughter, Death Dealer, you know, all those kind of stuff. Egyptian Queen.
Yeah, yeah.
All those, you know, if you Googled Frank Frazetta and paintings, you know, probably those images are going to come up before anything else. And those kind of, you know, and Death Dealer being the one we're going to talk about right now, that was something he introduced, I think, in the 60s first. But then he revisited it
a bunch of times.
Right? And it's the Death Dealer, the sixth version of Death Dealer.
So, yes, which is later.
Yeah.
But so this is an illustration painting. Sold. Now, you got to remember, this is only a guy from the 1960s. Illustrator. This painting sold for $1.7 million, almost $1.8 million.
Crazy.
For, you know...
But even, I think that Death Dealer 6, Chris, was painted in the 80s or 90s.
Yeah, I think it was later.
Yeah, it was the 80s or 90s, which is scary to think what the original 1963
Well, the original is the one on the horse, right?
Right.
And for a long time, he wouldn't even sell his paintings. So,
right.
So even for... this to come up is sort of a rarity,
right?
Because he had his own museum for a while. I mean, I don't even know if it's still going or not. It might have been shut down, but
I don't know either.
I think we did a story about a while ago talking about how there's like issues with people wanting to pillage it or something like that.
Anyways,
there's lots of great comic book artwork that is sold for a lot of money. Here we have the top. Oh, this is a comic. Sorry, this is something else. So, but you know, even comics in general selling for a lot of money these days. I see here top comic in the auction, that same Heritage auction, a 4.0, so a graded 4 out of 10.
Uh-huh.
Action Comics number one sold for $573,000.
My goodness. You know what? I mean, comic books, comic book art.
Yeah.
Highly collectible, obviously. The uniqueness of obviously comic book art are they're all one-offs.
That's right.
That's the only copy.
Yeah.
You know, the Action One, you're getting you have 100 or so copies to choose from.
That's right.
A 4.0, maybe, I don't know, I'm making up a number, maybe the 47th or 53rd best copy out there, whatever. It still commands a huge amount of money, but
yeah.
I look for art to be to continue, that's kind of like, you know, uniqueness.
It's still going to rise.
But it's still going to rise.
But here's the thing.
When
it comes to original artwork, it's all about the artist, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be a somewhat well-known artist, or it has to be such a fantastic piece of artwork that it really captures an emotion from the person.
Right.
Because you know what? Because you can go to a convention and start soliciting all kinds of different artists around there. I'm not going to mention any names. I don't even know any names that I can say that of a. You know, I don't want to say a lesser artist, but,
but
a guy that just comes out of art school,
right?
Nobody knows who he is.
Yep.
You could commission that person,
right?
He could go nowhere,
yeah,
or he could become the next, you know, Frank Frazetta,
right?
Absolutely.
So,
and that's the gamble you're going to take if you want to start getting in on buying.
Yeah, I think like it's just like comic books. I think with art, just buy the ones that speak to you,
yeah,
right, and then you're going to be safe. If you really love that piece, then you're going to buy it.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Now, Chris, it's funny because I read this article about art and the value of it, and it's kind of related to comic book value, and then it just got kind of my mind thinking about how crazy we are with assessing values to, you know, inanimate objects.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just a piece of paper with some scribbling on
totally,
it and stuff
yep.
like that. It is worth money. And then I was just reading the news, and my eyes caught this great story about collecting.
Okay.
And about value. And it was this guy named Jim Gregorio.
Mm.
Gregorio.
Right, yes.
And he is a down and out guy in New York City. He used to kind of reside at the Chelsea Hotel.
Okay.
And of course, Chris, the Chelsea Hotel was like a beatnik heaven in the 60s.
Right.
You know, Jack Kerouac. And in the late 60s, all the rockers, Janis Joplin, Hendrix, Leonard Cohen stayed there. They didn't have to be rockers. Joni Mitchell.
Right.
Artists, writers like Mark Twain stayed in the late
1800s. Okay,
This was like I think it's in Soho or in the Greenwich Village area, whatever it is. It's like a bohemian type of place,
right?
In and out. So this guy, I guess he was down and out, and he was, I think he was homeless at the time. And he was kind of hanging around the Chelsea, and they were refurbishing it.
Okay.
And these workmen had these, like, taking all these doors to a dumpster.
Okay.
These doors had huge X's on them.
Okay.
But they'd have the number on them, like, because they were doors,
right?
You know, 201,
yep,
or like hotel doors,
sure.
Right? And he'd go, hey, what are you guys doing with those doors?
Yeah.
Goes, yeah, we're throwing them out. We're redoing the hotel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Goes, hey, can I have them?
Yeah.
Sure. So he arranged to get these 50 or 60 doors taken somewhere.
That's amazing, yeah.
And then he went and he did research on the room numbers.
Right.
So, for example, he would find out that Bob Dylan stayed in room 201.
Okay, right.
And
right.
from 68 to 69 or whatever, a certain time. And maybe he wrote some songs in there.
Yeah.
Or that Mark Twain stayed in room 412, but 70 years later, Tom Wolfe stayed in room 412.
Okay,
you know?
Yeah.
So he had this history of these doors.
It's amazing.
And then he put them up for sale.
Oh, man.
Well, good Chris. The Bob Dylan door got $100,000.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay?
That's amazing.
The Janis Joplin and Leonard Cohen, apparently they had an affair behind door number whatever.
Yeah.
It got $85,000. you know, where Madonna stayed, $13,000. Hendrix, $13,000.
Yeah.
Jack Kerouac, the door that the room that he once stayed in.
Yeah, yeah.
$30,000.
Really?
You know, Bogart stayed there. Everybody stayed there. I bet you if they did more and more research, I bet you each door would have
somebody.
A dozen great names that stayed in that room.
That's amazing.
Right?
Yeah.
But we, as a society, as a collecting frenzied kind of species, I don't know what the heck to call us, we're attaching these massive values to these doors that locked in these personalities.
It's crazy what it's people like, will buy and collect.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. But you know what? I mean, what's the next big collecting thing, right?
Doors,
Doors, apparently, What, now, did any members of the Doors...
Stay behind
those doors?
I bet you they did. But it would only matter with Jim Morrison stayed.
That's
I don't
true,
think
yeah,
anybody
yeah.
would... I don't know.
No one would care.
But I thought that was just fascinating how we assess value and how we give importance to... Just
and we
these
do,
things,
you know
right?
what I mean? And really, comics are just things, and artwork is just things.
Yeah, and these doors.
They're all original, in a sense, except
yeah.
for comics, maybe not. But, you know, the original artwork is an original. That door, that's the only door that, you know, maybe that Janis Joplin stayed behind.
Right.
Right? So there is sort of a uniqueness to it.
Chris, what you and I, you know, once this radio show stops recording, you and I are going to start plotting our new riches scheme. We're going to figure out something other than doors.
What else?
Whether it be toilet seats.
There you
or
go.
Or I don't know what. Bicycle seats.
Yeah,
I don't know what. We're gonna figure something
Tom
out.
Tom Hardy's ass sat on this
yeah,
toilet.
Tom yeah, Tom Hardy's ass sat on this thing. I mean, it's amazing. And you know what? I mean, all we can put, and once we put it on eBay, I think the caveat.
Oh, man.
Hey, I think the caveat here, all we need to do, Chris, at the end, this is what we do.
Okay.
That's what you tell them. We go down to Canadian Tire. We buy a whole, or the scrap yard. And we get a whole bunch of toilet seats.
Yeah.
And then we put a question mark behind everyone. That's all we need.
Really. That's it.
Yeah. Lee Majors? Question mark. Farrah Fawcett? Question mark.
Lee Majors. Not like Robert Downey Jr.
No, Lee Majors.
Lee Majors.
Man.
Sika? Question mark.
Sika? Question mark. This toilet seat was in a porta potty. On the corner of whatever and whatever.
Oh, goodness.
Man.
Hey, I'll tell you something.
What's
I'll
that?
Tell you. If you had Stormy Daniels' toilet seat right now,
that's
that'd
right.
be big money
that'd
right
be
now.
Huge
big money.
Money. You'd be flush with cash.
Is this thing on? Hello? Is this thing on?
I just killed that whole conversation.
Yeah, that's the end of that one. Listen, let's have a quick musical interlude here. I don't even know what I'm going to play after that. I feel like...
A cleanse.
I don't even know what to play. Here you go. I think this one's apropos.
Those books were making the whole
I thought, you know, cleaning up the town is apropos for toilet talk.
Swinging.
Yeah.
I love it. Hey, Chris, that brings us to industry news part deux, brought to you by Stella Artois, the Belgian club soda that is the choice of athletes and toilet aficionados around the world.
Hey, you know what? What I was just saying there, you know, cleaning up the town is apropos for toilet talk.
Uh-huh.
I think, you know, that might be our next podcast.
I like it.
Toilet talk.
Toilet talk.
Talk all about the kind of celebrities that have ever sat on toilets over the years.
Wow. I like that.
You know,
that.
Everything from, Fatty Arbuckle to Sika to...
I think we're on to
Robert
something.
Robert Downey Jr.
I think we're on to something.
I'm not so sure what, but yeah. Maybe something.
I'm not so all sure right. what. Right, but, yeah, we'll discuss it. We'll look into that. We're looking always for ideas from the listenership. So if you guys got anything.
Any ideas.
Just text at comicbookdaily.com.
All right.
Chris, let's talk about...
Are we going to... what are we talking about here? We're talking about DC Universe or...
Well, we're talking about DC raising their prices of comic books. Let's do it. Because, Chris, if the show does anything, it talks about... the health and the well-being of local comic book shops.
Right,
and as you know, over the last couple of years, there's been a disparity between Marvel's $3.99 U.S. price point and DC's $2.99 U.S. price point.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
that's all going away.
All going away. Uh-huh. It seems like DC's raising their prices.
Yep.
There's going to be a... You know what? Here, do they have to raise it by a dollar? It seems like they always do that. Like, why can't it be... $3.50,
yeah, like from $3 to $4 is actually a 33% increase.
Right.
Why does it have to be a 33% increase?
Yeah. Right. So why does it have to be so much? Why can't they just raise it to
10%?
10%.
Yeah.
Even, you know, whatever 10% is or equals out to be like, you know, $3.50.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. That would be like 16%.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah. It's, you know what? It's a big price hike. I don't think this is going to really change the marketplace that much.
You know what? There are still people with fixed comic book budgets, Chris.
Right.
At your local comic book shop, there are still people that, like, hey, you know what? I'm going to be a responsible citizen. I'm going to be a responsible husband or wife. I'm going to be a responsible parent. I'm going to be a responsible consumer.
Right.
And spend within my means.
Yeah.
And my means is $50 a week.
Right.
For the things I enjoy.
Right.
Right? Well, that's the difference between I'm making up numbers here, but that's the difference between getting 10 books a week and 7 books a week.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So,
it says here, so the solicitations for the July shipping titles have Wonder Woman, The Flash, Batman, Justice League, Superman, and Action Comics at $3.99, while Harley Quinn, Detective Comics, Hal Jordan, and the Green Lantern Corps, and the Green Lanterns at $2.99. So...
But that's changing now. They're going to change that. They're going to change them all to $3.99.
Now they're all going to be $3.99.
Right.
So yeah.
Except they have some kids lines that are going to stay at $2.99.
Right.
But it'll put them in line with Marvel.
Do they want to do that though? You know, Marvel is the I don't know. I
okay, Chris. But here's the thing.
Here's the thing.
You and I discussed this before. What are the economics of putting out a comic book?
So great question.
Yeah, we've argued this before. Here's the thing.
Here's the thing.
The companies that put out comic books are multi-billion-dollar companies.
Absolutely.
We're not talking about Dark Horse and Image.
No.
Okay, when we say this. We're talking about Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
And Disney.
Right.
Okay? Multi-billion dollar, vertically, in terms of content, structured corporations.
Right.
Right? Whose incubator of ideas has been, over the last 30 years or so, of the comic book media.
Right.
Right? This is where characters are created. This is where storylines are developed. This is where... these things are taking and putting it into toy lines, TV shows, movies, all that kind of stuff,
right?
So the economics of printing a comic book suck.
Right.
Like, there's no money in it.
Well,
my point.
Okay, so, and that's a great question because, you know what, or a great statement. I was watching an article and reading an article. They kind of had both little clips as well as interview thing there with Jim Shooter.
Mm-hmm.
So Jim Shooter, famed editor-in-chief.
Marvel editor-in-chief, yeah.
From the 1970s and early 80s.
Yep.
And he was talking about how he doesn't like the way that Marvel's running their company right now, right? So
like Marvel print
right now.
Right.
Which we have to quote, I'll talk about that in a second. But when he was running Marvel, his X-Men books were selling 750,000 copies for X-Men alone. I don't know if all the Marvel titles combined sell 750,000 copies in a month now. And that was just one title.
They obviously do, but yeah, you're right.
I don't know if it's that much, if it's that close to that, but...
No, they do.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, well...
Well, okay. You figure that they have like 70 titles and let them average...
They had 70 titles back then.
Okay, they have 70 titles. My point is now, let them average 25,000. That's still like close to 2 million.
But how does the company make money nowadays by selling 25,000 copies of a book once they pay...
That's my point. They don't. My point is they don't.
Back in the day, they did. But now, I don't think... I agree with you.
Okay, but what I guess what I'm asking or what I'm saying is why raise the prices? What I'm saying is... Warner Brothers isn't raising the prices so they can make DC Comics publishing as a unit profitable. I hope not.
It might be.
Yeah, I guess if they are, I guess my argument is that they shouldn't. I guess you and I have always, I think, argued that you know, the comic book medium is the absolute cheapest R&D
totally.
Part of these multi-billion-dollar conglomerations, and they should try to get the print into the hands of readers. You know, I'm not going to even say as a loss leader, but
well, just, kind of, right?
Yeah, but just as you know, don't look at the economics. I mean, for cripe's sakes, Chris, Marvel, Disney, who just made $1 zillion on Avengers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whether they make Marvel publishing, Marvel comic books.
Yeah.
Whether in a year they make 15 million or lose 15 million?
Right.
Who gives a crap? Well, from their perspective,
totally,
I would
totally,
say.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or 30 million or 40 million. I don't even know if their budget is that big
right.
for just the comic book section.
Right.
It's peanuts
yeah.
compared to what they're doing
with
the properties that are coming out of the comic books.
Right.
Right?
We're talking about movies, we're talking about theme parks,
we're talking about merchandising of pajamas, all that kind of stuff.
All that
so,
stuff.
I don't know. I think it's a mistake for DC Warners to look at, you know what? Let's raise our prices so we can make a little bit more money selling Batman whatever.
Let's say, for example, their average title probably sells, 50,000? 30,000?
Right. Yeah, let's
so,
say.
So that
let's say 50, 40.
Basically, they're going to make an extra $30,000 a month.
Uh-huh.
Really?
Whoopie-doo.
Well, maybe more than that, but...
Okay, let's say 20 titles, $600,000 a month.
Yeah.
Seven. Let's say $10 million a year.
A year. But to them, that's nothing.
Right.
That's huge.
But they might lose sales, so
totally.
It might not be $10 million. It may
right.
be, but the point is... You can't look at the 10 million. You got to look at the number of readers because
right.
the number of readers is the gauge to whether the new properties that you're introducing are catching on or not. If you're making them boutique-y items, then they're not going to do that groundswell of popularity.
No.
You know what I mean?
No. Yep, I totally get it.
And I think that's the catch-22. That's the thing because comics, if anything, I don't know. Like, here's a question.
Yep.
Here's a question. What character from Marvel / DC in the last 10 years will become an iconic million, tens of millions, $100 million generator of revenue for each of those companies?
That hasn't already happened?
Like, that came out in the last 10 years.
A new character?
Yeah.
Oh.
I guess my point is, these characters came out of the comic books. They were created in the comic books.
Yes.
For peanuts.
Yep.
And then they will later generate $100 million probably or something
yep,
or whatever.
Yep, yep.
I can't think of very many. No. But I think of, like, Kamala Khan.
Kamala Khan, yeah, for sure she is.
Miles Morales, yeah. even though that's more than 10 years ago.
Maybe,
Well, like, who on the DC side?
I can't... DC, I don't know. It's a great question.
Like if you looked at the year 1970 to 1980.
Yeah.
The decade. That's not a year. That's a decade. And you look at the amount of intellectual property that was created by the publishers at that time. Yeah. It's staggering.
It's huge.
It's staggering the amount of first appearances, whether it's a Wolverine, whether it's Punisher, whether it's Storm, whether it's Ghost Rider, whether
Colossus,
it's whatever.
All that stuff,
unbelievable amount of new intellectual property created by the publishers.
Right.
And you look at 2008 to 2018.
Yes.
And
it's not nearly as much.
Yeah.
As new characters go.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, new important characters.
Right.
I mean, you have
Why is that?
You know,
I guess my argument with the reason I said that is if comics are cheaper and more are being sold, I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but I think the number of characters created would be more.
Well, you know what I'm going to say about that is I don't It's also a time period right now because, I mean, way back when, there was a time when if you had asked me 10 years ago if Deadpool would ever be the character it is now, I wouldn't have said so. I wouldn't have said, oh, yeah, it's a one-off character. But, you know, you get the right team on the right character at the right time, and all of a sudden there's magic happening, right? So, you know, a lot of these characters that are maybe... nobody characters. I mean, even the Punisher, when he first appeared, he wasn't really much of a character. Wolverine wasn't much of a character when he first appeared in Hulk until, you know, they brought him back in Giant Size X-Men number one.
Mm-hmm.
Punisher wasn't a really big character until, you know, they decided to use him a few more times and then they gave him his miniseries.
Yeah, like another 6-7 years.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
eight.
Like, maybe even more, right?
Yeah.
So, a lot of these characters were really just sort of nobody characters until you get the right magic happening with the right writer and the right artist, and somebody looks at that background character and says, "Hey, you know what? There's something here with that Prowler character or whoever it happens to be.
Right.
You know, there's something here with Ragman or whatever. Like, you know, there's something that they can do something with.
Daredevil was on the way to extinction until Frank Miller picked up his pencil.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Yeah. So you know, I think it's an unfair assumption to say, well, what characters are popular now? However, I agree that there needs to be more newer stories, newer characters appearing in comics.
Right.
But it needs to be organic. It can't just be forced on us like the way,
Korean Hulk.
Riri Williams was with Iron Man. Uh-huh. Or the
So you're Amadeus taking Cho. You're taking old characters and just changing them.
Right. That's cheap.
Right.
Like, that's cheap. That's the cheap way of... Give me a Kamala Khan, which is a new character, new power, all that kind of... I would much rather read that than the fact that now you've made the Hulk Korean.
Right. Wow. Okay. So, DC going to this $3.99 is just... I don't even know what it is, but I don't like it. Let's put it that way.
I agree with you. Totally agree with you. Let's have a quick musical interlude here, and we'll come back, and we're going to talk a little bit more about DC and what they're doing with their movie stuff these days. But you know what? Well, I'm feeling a little bit like I need to play some bossa nova right now. Do you feel good about the bossa nova? Blame it on the bossa nova.
Love bossa nova.
All right. We'll be right back.
Yeah, baby.
And that was the Quincy Jones Soul Boss Nova.
I love that. That was a Canadian game show.
Well, so that was, yeah, they used that on Definition.
Definition, so,
and
that's
then,
right.
And then, of course, it made immensely popular with Austin Powers.
Right.
Right, which I think he got that from the Definition.
Definition.
Because Michael Myers is a good Canadian boy.
That's
there,
right, good Canadian kid.
Yeah.
Awesome, Chris. Industry News Part 3, I think, is coincidentally sponsored by Stella Artois Club Soda.
I like that.
Go out and get a six-pack today.
There you go.
Chris, let's talk about DC. So, hey, listen, I got to tell you, Chris.
What's that?
I've been watching some TV lately. And,
have you now?
Yeah. And I've been starting to get, like, finally coming around to this Netflix thing.
They're a Netflix thing, you know. It's been only been around for like, you know.
I know that. I've primarily used Netflix to try to go look for movies, but the Canadian version of Netflix sucks.
It's right? getting better, but yes.
So I was able. Then you just kind of, I don't know, you have a slow weekend or something like that, and you start clicking on these series. And the way they do the series now is you can watch them all at once.
Yeah.
And my goodness, they're so addictive.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't stop watching the damn thing. Yeah. She's like, you gotta watch one. It's like 48 minutes, and it's like, and then they leave you on a cliffhanger. It's like, oh, crap, I'm gonna watch the next one. And it's like, crap, all of a sudden you've watched four.
Oh, yeah.
And you didn't want to watch four, you wanted to watch one.
You're lucky if it's only four. Sometimes it's like six or eight.
Oh.
And I'll tell you, what's even worse about that is sometimes you'll watch a series, and let's say it's because it tells you, you know, there's 10 episodes, right?
Right.
And so you might get like 7 episodes in, and you're like, man, I'm really not enjoying this, but I've only got 3 episodes left.
I might as well waste my time.
I might as well kill 3 hours of my life.
So what are good, comic-related Netflix stuff?
Oh, that's a great question. Okay, so you know what?
What do you recommend?
Comic-related ones?
Yeah.
Number one, by far, is going to be Daredevil.
Yeah,
Daredevil is a made for Netflix series.
Yep.
Daredevil season 1 and 2 is great. Followed closely by The Punisher. Season 1's great.
How about, what's her name there?
Jessica Jones.
Jessica Jones. How's that?
I don't mind it. I thought the first season was good. I thought the second season was okay.
Right.
I'll tell you, it goes downhill pretty quick from there, though.
In your opinion.
In my opinion.
Right.
In my opinion. I thought Luke Cage was...
I watched, like, the first episode of Luke Cage. I think I fell asleep.
Yeah, it was pretty... You know what? I liked the first few episodes because I really liked Cottonmouth, the character.
Right.
I thought he was great. I thought the actor was fantastic. That's I can't remember the guy's name. But anyways, he was in that. And then... Man, the Iron Fist season 1 was
terrible.
Almost unwatchable.
Really?
And then they had a Defenders mini series.
Like how was that?
It was terrible.
Oh my gosh.
They're all, you know what? Iron Fist is the guy they got playing him is just an awful
wrong.
Actor.
He's wrong for the part.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna
say that those are my good. That's my ranking of the Marvel ones.
The Marvel ones. Now I'm reading here that DC, and I guess it's not gonna be through Netflix. They're gonna be through the Warners.
So you know what?
They're gonna do their own streaming of a bunch of characters.
Everybody's latching on to this streaming service now, right?
Yeah.
So you've got Netflix, which primarily, as of right now, is creating and producing series for Marvel. So
like Hell's Kitchen type stuff.
Yeah, they've got all that stuff. And even though it's owned by Disney, there are a few Disney things on Netflix still. That's not going to last because Disney actually is going to start their own Disney streaming service,
right.
Where we just found out recently that John Favreau, John Favreau, who directed the first Iron Man movie, he plays Happy Hogan.
Yeah,
he is in charge of making the first live action Star Wars series, and that will be for Disney's new streaming service.
Oh, a Star Wars live action, like a series,
Wow. Live action, and it's supposed
that's going to be popular.
It's going to take place 7 years after Return of the Jedi and about 20 years before The Force Awakens.
Right.
So there's that time period there that's supposed to take place. So now you're telling me here that there's going to be a DC Universe streaming service, which basically is part of the Warner Brothers thing, and it's now we're going to have a new 13-episode series that's going into production for Doom Patrol.
Doom Patrol, cool.
So,
but nobody knows Doom Patrol.
Nobody knows and or cares about Doom Patrol right now, right?
I mean, so did they pick the right one?
Well, maybe, I don't know. It depends on who's writing it. If you're getting, the guys that did Game of Thrones writing it, then absolutely. If you get the guy that did Iron Fist, then maybe not
so
much.
But they're going to do Swamp Thing. They're going to do Titans. They're going to do Young Justice. They're going to do what the heck? I think Harley Quinn. No, Harley Quinn's animated, but
There's going to be a variety of both animated.
Yeah,
and
but I'm starting to get scared, Chris. You tell me, hey guy. So here's a story.
Here's a story.
Buddy comes in to the shop, and he's got a box of comics to sell me.
Yep.
And I go, what you got in there? I go, oh, pal. I got gold in here. I got the run of Doom Patrol,
yep.
Swamp Thing, Titans, and Young Justice.
Oh, man.
And I'm thinking, lottie. There's going to be like three books in there that I want.
Total.
Yeah, and then everything else I don't.
Yeah.
Right? So are they, picking the right stuff? Can or should Warner Brothers do, Batman?
No.
Superman, Wonder Woman.
Okay, well, I say no really quickly.
Flash, Green Lantern.
Sure, why not? Yeah. I would love that. I would love to see a Batman TV show.
They're going to these secondary, tertiary characters.
But they're going to go to those characters because they want to save Batman and Superman for the big screen.
Why can't you do both? Why can't you do both?
That's a great question.
Batman fans, quazillion of them. They would love a great Batman live action and a great Batman.
But I think they're trying to do like Marvel did with their sort of tertiary characters, with the Hell's Kitchen characters. But you know what? There was a time when Iron Man was a tertiary character.
Yeah, fair.
Right?
Fair.
So why not create movies out of them? If you get the right writer and the right, director and all that, you can gold can be anywhere. But if you get to, I'd be more interested in seeing what DC Universe can do with characters like the Human Target or something that's maybe not so superhero-y or not so fantastic,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, which I understand that's what comics are all about. But even like I know they have a John Constantine show right now, or at least he was in it. But that's where I would see that kind of character in that DC universe.
Well, there
could
be a whole Vertigo section their streaming, right?
Yeah.
All their
stuff. You could
have
a Sandman TV show.
Yeah,
You could have, Invisibles or all those awesome Vertigo kind of books, right?
Yeah.
Books of Magic, all that stuff. I could see it happening. I just don't know if... the problem that I'm going to say that we're going to see here is... How many subscription services can one person subscribe to?
Yeah.
Right? Like right now, I subscribe to Netflix.
Yeah.
But there's also Crave is out there. They tried to... There's that other one that that did not last at all that they tried and that are already tanked. I think Rogers tried their own thing. That tanked.
Right. But when you think about it, when you think like... $9 or $8 a month or whatever. When you think about what we used to pay for cable back then, you subscribe to five, and that's $40 a month.
If you're getting that instead of cable, but a lot of people are getting cable as well as Netflix. So then you want Netflix and the Disney Channel and the DC Universe and the whatever, and then all of a sudden, how much TV can you possibly watch?
Yeah, fair. Fair.
So anyways, we've run out of time. I could go on and on.
All right. Hey, listen, Comic Culture was engineered by Chris Owen. We're at 93.3 CFMU, McMaster's award-winning radio stations. If you have any comments, please visit comicbookdaily.com. Head to the show link and add your comments down in the comments field. We're on... did I say we're on 93.3 already?
Maybe.
CFMU,
I wasn't listening to
McMaster's award-winning radio station. We encourage everyone to go out and support their local comic book shop.
And have yourself a wonderful day.